My tongue speaks so they will know, giving voice to the legacy that has come before. Sojourner, Ida, Dorothy, Mary, Ella, Maya Angelou, others left out of history books, many refusing to, denying my humanity, but I stand and demand. From birthing of a civilization to nurturing a nation, we've been right here. I breast the comfort of men and suckling babies. How dare they not see me? Strength, genius, and beauty. I give voice to this beautiful struggle to shine and bring forth the light, staking claim to our birthright and inheritance of this earth, an overflow of compassion and justice. Using my voice to tell the children, telling the stories of Black excellence, Africans, speaking truth to power, if only for 1 hour, they will stop and know that my tongue speaks, so they will know that. Ain't I a woman?
This is Voices of Advocacy Radio with your host, Lakeisha Gray Sewell, showcasing leading activists, community servants, and entrepreneurs. You are now tuned in to truth, community passion, and amplified legacy. Can you hear it? It's Voices of Advocacy Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Voices of Advocacy Radio. We are so excited today. Our guest is none other than the phenomenal Lisa Butler, here to discuss Black girls and sensationalizing bad girl behavior. We're really going to delve beyond just the symptomatic manifestations into deeper causes, triggers, and preventions of this phenomenon that we've seen pretty much everywhere, Lisa, in television and social media. But before I get to you really quickly, I just want to introduce the audience to your brilliance. Lisa Butler is the founder and president of Her Voice Incorporated, a consulting company dedicated to the emotional and mental wellness of women and girls. Her Voice provides creative and innovative interventions for women to heal, grow, and gain new perspectives on living empowered lives. Lisa has been facilitating these workshops, seminars, and support groups for women and girls on self-esteem, forgiveness, and shame for more than 16 years. And today you are serving as a Ford Scholar. Yay! Clinical social work student at the University of Chicago. Lisa also is the owner of Black Girl Incorporated, a group support program for African-American girls ages 12 to 19. And in the part of that, Black Girl Inc. has been providing services for girls ages 12 to 16 as a vendor and a consultant for the Chicago Public School System, also for a number of years, almost two decades, Lisa.
I know.
That's a lot of work. No, that's not old. That's putting in the work. That's putting in the time. That means you know our girls. And that's why I'm so excited to have you as a guest, because we really do need someone who has been able to really speak to the things that they've seen up close, you know, working, interacting day to day with our girls. So I'm so happy to have you. And I also want to just make mention of the actual research project that you're doing under the Ford Scholarship, exploring the impact of colorism and body images on African American girls' sexual behaviors.
Yeah,
that is.
Yes, that's what I'm working on for the winter quarter and going into spring. I'll be actually doing focus groups and collecting data to kind of figure out whether or not those two constructs are having any impact on the sexual choices that our daughters are making. So I'm excited about that. I've been a research assistant before, but I've never had my own project. So I'm excited and nervous, but I think that it's something important for us to look at and explore.
And not only important, it is absolutely germane. It's a must. We have to do that. We have to find out what is driving our girls, what the impetus is for a lot of their decision making. And not only just, I'm not a researcher myself, but I would even venture to say that colorism and body images play a role in not only the sexual behaviors, but exactly in what we're talking about today.
Absolutely, I agree.
So, So this is great. And you know, I also want you to come back to talk about what you find when you get your results.
Sure.
We definitely want to make sure that we get that out there. But let's go ahead and delve into this topic of just this phenomenon, and I'm calling it a phenomenon, Lisa, because we know that it is there. We know it's present. Being Black girls ourselves, we definitely mm-hmm. can do some of the things that we saw when we were growing up and even what we were doing. And we're around them every day, so we know that there is true aggression that is happening. The even statistics are telling us, like the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority released statistics saying that 52% of the females committed to the Illinois Department of Corrections youth facilities between the ages of 13 and 6 years old were offenses against a person, and 35% were against property. So there's violence and aggression overwhelmingly being shown. This is why they're being incarcerated in the first place.
Yep, definitely. There's a huge problem with aggression. And, you know, initially when I started doing this work, first let me go back and say thank you for having me on this show.
No problem.
How I feel about you and your work. And Girls Like Me Project is somewhere that I would send my own child. So if I had a daughter, she'd be coming to you. So that's just kind of how much I believe in your work and your passion for the work and your real desire to help girls evolve into healthy spaces and places. So I just wanted to give a shout out to you.
It's mutual. Mutual.
So now that we're in the Mutual Admiration Society. So aggression in girls is something that I've thought about, obviously, because in the work that I'm doing. And I guess over the last 5 or 6 years in doing the work, I've seen girls in my groups and just talking to girls in general. I'm around girls all the time. I've seen it, and it's unbelievable how quickly they go from 0 to 1 million, not to 10, to mm-hmm. 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last year I was doing a group, and somebody mentioned a young woman's name who wasn't even in my group. And when I tell you that just the mention of this person's name had the girls out of their seats, and I'm like, wait a minute, she's not even here. And I really started to think about, you know, what is happening that young women are so pissed? And I'm sorry, that's not a good word. So angry.
No, it's this is real radio. We're not.
Okay. So yeah, they hot under the collar. And mm-hmm. I'm like, what is going on? So aggression has been something I've been thinking about and reading about and exploring through different modalities in my groups. So I'm glad we're talking about this today because it's important.
Yeah, and, you know, this is real radio. We know that not every girl is aggressive. We're not saying mm-hmm. that. We're not saying mm-hmm. that this is the majority of our girls. But what we are saying is that it is a problem, that mm-hmm. it is impacting their lives and their livelihoods, and it's also impacting how they see themselves and how other people see them. Just the names. You talked about the young lady who wasn't even in the class that set off the other girls who were in your class. We can mm-hmm. mention names of people nobody's ever met outside of their own, you know, virtual fame, you know, internet fame, like Jarkeisha.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Everybody mm-hmm. pretty much knows mm-hmm. who that is. Why? Because mm-hmm. She, you know, gained internet fame through what? Aggression and violence and fighting.
Right.
You know,
right.
Very rarely do we hear Shamichael Manuel, the girl who was actually victimized and beaten by Jarkeisha. We don't hear that name.
Right.
But we do hear the name of those who are the aggressors. You know, there's the video of the young lady who was fighting the teacher, and a mm-hmm. female teacher, a Black teacher, a woman, was fighting a Black girl. So
mm-hmm.
we know that this is real. We know that these are not made up statistics. We know that, you know, that it is something, as you said, that it's important and needs to be looked at and delved into. And so my first question to you then is just to go ahead and ask the question, what is some of the underlying causes? Why are we seeing such a rise in this Black girl aggression?
Well, I want to talk about aggression from a macro perspective, briefly. Mm-hmm. So just that, you know, you have people say black girls aggression. You know, what is aggression? Mm-hmm. You know, it's different things to different people. So there are two kinds of aggressive behavior. One is reactive, right? So we know that that just means that the person, the young woman, is reacting to some kind of maltreatment or what she perceives as maltreatment or, you know, something wrong. And then being done to her, that's wrong. And then you have proactive aggression, which is just aggressive acts intended to kind of self-serving, you know, you're gonna be the girl, you're the one, the bad bee. if you just go around messing with people and fighting people, and you know, it's a matter of respect, right? So if somebody disrespects you, then you're gonna stand up to them and beat them up and fight them and jump on them to gain popularity. So those are the two kinds of aggressive behavior. And then you have two kinds of aggression itself. So then you got the overt aggression, which is just, you know, somebody fighting, like physically fighting other people. And then you have the relational aggression, which I think fuels a lot of what we're seeing, and that is bullying, social media, via social media, bullying, taunting, gossiping. And I don't know if you've ever seen a young woman's social media, a Facebook page. But I've seen some young women's Facebook pages, and boy, I mean,
yes, ma'am,
that causes so much of what we're seeing in terms of people fighting. I mean, just they go after each other via social media. And I think that's something that's important to point out. A lot of one of these incidents at a mall recently, not sure if it was here or someplace else, but they would say it started via social media. So somebody was talking about somebody, and then they decided to meet up and take care of the business at the mall. So just kind of wanted to throw that out in terms of what aggression is. So when you start talking about kind of what the underlying issues are, there's so many. I mean, if you're talking about urban girls, and that's kind of who I've worked with, so that's who I know the most about, you're talking about, you know, family fragmentation, kind of maladaptive parenting practices, lack of resources, sexual abuse, physical abuse, being invalidated. Nobody really deals with you in your house. Like, you're just, the only time somebody, you know, is communicating with you is via violence or yelling and screaming and calling you out of your name. And so the only time that you get any kind of attention is when your behavior is on 10, right? That's the only time anybody pays attention to you. And so a lot of what we're seeing comes from girls simply being invalidated, not just at home, on the streets, at school, everywhere. Where's the space for black girls? Nowhere. And so when people internalize that, they're mad and they're pissed. I remember working at a high school on the West Side, and one of the social workers was relaying a story about a young woman who would come in at 8:30 in the morning, walk through the metal detectors, which is already, you know, to me, kind of setting kids up, I mean, a certain kind of mindset in a child, right? I got to come through a metal detector when I come into school. So it's not like a welcoming, loving kind of environment, right?
She comes and it's already giving you that. It's already telling you your expectations are low. This is what we expect anyway. Yeah.
Absolutely. So she walks in and the social worker says, "Good morning." And the young woman looks at her in the face and says, "F you." And the social worker says, "F you." And I said, "Wait a minute." She started laughing, and I said, "Excuse me, can you tell me what's funny about, what do you think is funny about that?" And she was like, "Honey, so-and-so's coming in here, you know, talking to me like that. I get tired of it, so I just gave it back to her. Who does she think she is?" And I'm like, well, in my mind, if somebody comes into a school at 8:30 in the morning, a young woman, and she says, "F you," to an adult, the first thing I would think is, what happened to her? Last night, what happened to her walking to school?
Right.
What's going on? I would have pulled her to the side, explained to her the inappropriateness of the reply, and then asked, "Hey, what's going on?" And so the space for compassion and love and kindness is very limited in their lives. So what does a person do when all that's reflected back to them is negative and mean and harsh? Let's not even get into the macro of the culture in which we live in the United States and kind of what's going on now, right? So all that I'm seeing in my environment on the micro level and then the macro level, the energy in this country right now is not good. And so young people are struggling with their own development physiologically, mentally, emotionally. They're in this really interesting place, and they're trying to learn how to relate to people and things in their environment. And guess what? Their environment is reflecting back to them some really bad stuff. And so they internalize that, and it's like dealing with a person who has no skin, who is just wearing a Band-Aid from head to toe, right? Just snatch the Band-Aid off. Every little thing it hurts to touch them, to talk to them. They're hurting. And so they react violently because they're mad.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, you know, to me it's as simple as that. I mean, I don't know how you live in a world, you know, with all these things happening and happening to you, and you don't see yourself in any positive ways in anybody's face. I'd be mad too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And then, as you said, you know, the first things you named out, having been in the suburbs and living with and working with girls from the suburbs as well, all of those things are also, you know, some of the things that those girls are dealing with, fragmented families, and sometimes being displaced from urban areas and having forced to live in those areas, forced away from family long distance. And then oftentimes being in areas where you're not the predominant culture, and your culture is not even validated or even, you know, it's forced assimilation in that regard. Parents are having to provide. So also, again, while they may not be out doing some questionable things, they're out working, and so you still don't get that time and attention. Well, what strikes me more in urban areas is that the structural, like you said, the environmental and the structural injustices and the structural just annihilation of the image of black womanhood and the image of black girls, where you know that you're going to a school, first of all, which doesn't even, your whole development is not even in the game. You know what I mean? It's just a holding pin, really, just to criminalize anybody that walks through that door. If you make it out, if you make it out, that just speaks to the resilience and the beauty of your what comes through your DNA and your heritage, because it's the game is set up against you. And as a child, you have no faculties, and there aren't many faculties for you to rely on outside of just what's in you, you know?
I was going to say, I really want to say this because you just brought up an excellent point. You know, we use terms in academia, and you just said it, structural racism, you know, structural oppression. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that to just kind of break that down, as you just did, when I say that, I mean when you live in areas that are blighted, there are no stores, there are no real restaurants, your school is raggedy, you don't have books. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody in your house has an education or has worked, not because they didn't want to, because they didn't have what they needed. These neighborhoods didn't have quality schools. So that's what we mean when we say structural racism, structural oppression.
Mm-hmm.
To the ground, it is just basically being denied things by the people that are in charge, things that everybody else may get, that the larger culture gets without question. Our girls aren't getting, our babies aren't getting.
And not only are the others getting it, the others, it's a privilege. There's no question about not having it. Like the idea of not having a store, a walkable neighborhood, is completely foreign. Like that would never happen. not having recreation centers for young people would never ever happen. You know, anywhere.
Yep, not having the pools in the schools not being functional, so you can't even learn how to swim. I was at Hyde Park High School, and let me tell you, I graduated in 87, so I just gave away my age. But listen, I'm at Hyde Park, and my gym teacher didn't give a so-and-so about me being late for my classes when it was time to swim. When it was time for gym, we had to participate in gym. We had to swim, okay? So now you walk into a gym. I walked into Inglewood's gym. When it was still Inglewood High School, the entire high school. I know it's been broken up into high schools now, but and the kids were sitting on the bleachers talking, and the gym teacher was a few kids on the floor, and the gym teacher was like, "I can't make them change into their clothes, So, I mean, just thinking about what is not there for them. So, I think when I started talking about when you and I started talking about structural racism and structural oppression, we have to break that down for people, because I don't think that folks really understand how hard it is for them.
And they don't take the time to really think of it. And I'm glad you made that point about the academia and the theoretical conversations we have. We don't take the time to really move beyond that conversation to see at the ground level, what does that mean? What is that? And like you said, it's not an existence that anybody, even the people who use those terms, if you know those terms, then you're pretty much probably you're not in the conversations. The conversations are more about that work, using those terms, than it is about getting on the ground level. So I'm so glad you.
And Lakeisha, that's what makes us so unique and so powerful, too. That's what makes you and I specifically, because we can bring the ivory tower down.
Yeah.
And my thing is research. Research exists somewhere out there, with a lot of people talking and writing, but we need to hit the ground with this stuff, because nobody cares.
And make it real.
And make it real for people so they can understand it, and make it real so that whatever we're looking at and whatever the findings are, we can bring that work to the ground so that it can help people. That's so important to me.
Okay, my next question was going to be about the fascination, like why we're seeing so much of this, this aggressive behavior, why we're seeing it everywhere. But before we even get to that, because what I really want, the goal of this radio show, is to not just talk about something and to, examine it, but to really find the solution to it. And at this point, you know my heart is like yours. And so I want to know how do we help our girls? You know, we talked about the faculties of how they even come out of all of that. How do they survive? How do they have the resiliency? And so that's what I want to ask you. How do we teach them emotional intelligence? How do we teach them to even, say the name of a girl should not have that much power over you, so that she's not even in your presence, but yet she can elicit a reaction from you that's self-destructive. So how do we teach them and reach them in that regard?
Well, I think one of the things that I've recognized in the last couple of years is that emotional dysregulation is real. So when I say emotional dysregulation, I mean young women and young men who cannot manage themselves at all, right? They just can't. Any little thing throws them off, and their behavior is always on a million, right? So a lot of what we're seeing, too, is the result of trauma that has not been dealt with. So when you factor all that stuff in, you have kids who are really, really acting out. So you said, what can we do? Well, one of the things we can do is, if we're going to provide interventions, and you and I have talked about this before, and I'm not going to go off on a tangent because I'm on a show, on a radio show. But if you're going to provide an intervention, I'm going to need for you to worry less about teaching girls what fork to use and more about, that can come too. I'm not saying that. I'm not negating that the importance of that.
Right,
when you're working with the kind of girls that need the most help and essentially, then I think what we have to do as people who are providing interventions is be as educated on their behaviors and them as people as possible. You can't go and have interventions where you're talking to them.
Oh, you just said a word. I'm sorry. I had a hallelujah moment. I'm sorry.
You can't throw, just sit there and talk at them and tell them what they need to do. Don't nobody care about that and what mm-hmm. you're saying. Because when they leave that space with you, they got to go back into the trauma field, violence field world that they live in, the resourceless world that they live in. Mm-hmm. And so what I want people who provide interventions to do is, A, pick up some books about adolescent. Go to your library, or go on your internet, and go into Google Scholar and put in there whatever issues that you are seeing. If it's aggression, if it's bullying, go and pull up some stuff. Read something. Then, once you do that, create some real comprehensive programming around things that might help our babies be better. Talk to them. Explore topics with them. Let them say what's on their heart about whatever it is that they're doing, how they're acting, what they're saying, what's being said to them. Provide a space for them to explore these topics with you. And don't be scared. Don't be scared. They're not going to bite you. They're not going to hurt you. They just want to talk. They want a space so they can say, this is how I feel, and this is why I do the things that I do. And you know as well as I do, Lakeisha, they will tell you. Mm-hmm. They'll tell you. Once they trust you and they know that you're for real, they will. The issues of their hearts will flow out of their mouths. I'm telling you, they mm-hmm. will. So those are some basic things. I want to also say, too, that this last year I started doing something called the emotional crawl. Emotion crawl. So what it is, you know what an art crawl is? You know how people go from one. So art crawls are, you can either go from one art gallery to the next.
Okay.
In succession. You know what I mean? Kind of looking at mm-hmm. different things. So what I did was I got a lot of flip charts. I love flip charts. I'm a post-it flip chart crazy person. Anyway, so I got a bunch of them and I put emotions on there: sad, angry, mad, lonely, disappointed. And I had the girls together in groups go to each one and write down whatever it elicited and whatever they thought, whatever they felt, whatever experiences they had with that emotion. Once they finished doing that, we pulled them down and put them on the floor and we discussed what was written on them. And let me just tell you that I had no idea kind of what this would, you know, bring up for them. Anyway, for instance, mad, angry. People started talking about not being able to manage that and feeling like they want to bust somebody's head. And we talked about where they feel this in their bodies. And they said, my hands, my feet, my stomach starts to hurt. And people were putting up their, you know, heart growth and cutting. And I've tried to commit suicide. I mean, things just started to really come out. And so we put it on the floor and we talked about it. And we started to talk about what we could do with those feelings and thoughts rather than react negatively to them. And we made a sheet where they talked, these are the things that I could do. I could call somebody. I could tell somebody that's close to me how I'm feeling. I could get a journal. I could go take a bath. I could listen to music rather than cut myself, punch somebody in the face. And we talked about I had them talk about feelings and thoughts being feelings and thoughts. They're not you. You know what I mean? They're separate. Mm-hmm. So you have these things. You're not those things. So it comes through, you have a feeling, and you sit there and you feel it, and then it goes. Because you're not going to feel that 24 hours a day, seven days a week. There are moments when you're okay, right? Mm-hmm. And let me just say that those conversations are so meaningful, not to me, but to them. Like, they really appreciate having those conversations. Oh, I never thought about it like that. I feel like I am my thoughts and my feelings. I never thought about it being something that it just happens to me and then it goes away, right? And mm-hmm. so those are the kind of things that we as, you know, people who provide interventions for young women have to start doing. Now, nobody told me. I came up with that emotional crawl just based on some tools that I have in terms of behavior therapies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is why I'm saying that as somebody who provides interventions, it is up to us to go out and look for tools to help them rather than going in there and just talking to them and taking them someplace and teach them how to use a fork. I mean, you know, when you want to get to the heart of the matter, you got to learn, you got to know, you have to have some, you got to be informed. And so I think that's important for people who provide interventions. It's also important for school administrators and teachers, not just for them dealing with the kids, but for their own stuff, right?
Right.
Because we see teachers who are completely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Like the teacher in Baltimore who fought the girl and told her she was going to F her up and kill her. And, that was nothing but your own stuff. You not being to deal with, or you not being able to say, let me feel what I'm feeling, let me feel this anger, let me feel this frustration, let me feel this total, just like if it was your own child, sometimes, you know, you get to that point, and you know, as an adult, you need to walk away, and she had not done that, she had not done her own stuff, so absolutely, yes.
You know what, too, I think when you see, when you see women who behave like that, we have, as adult women, we have triggers too. You know, I don't know what kind of teenage life you had, but I know what kind I had.
Mm-hmm.
And that little girl, that young woman in me, that little girl and that young woman, there's some things that still need to be healed, right? And
absolutely.
So I'm walking around with those people inside of me. And there are times, even in my groups, that I get triggered by girls. Now, the difference between me and the teacher in Baltimore is I know how to manage myself and my emotions. And I know how to turn it off and remember that this is a baby that I'm looking at. She has nothing to do with me and my issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's between me and my therapist.
Okay.
so it is not appropriate for me to allow myself to get so discombobulated that I respond to her in kind, because it's just not appropriate, and I should model what I expect from them. Period.
And that takes me to another point, Lisa, and that's why I'm so thankful for, again, your brilliance and just what you do on a larger scale, because even those of us who work with girls and who do a great job working with girls, we relate, girls walk away and say how powerful they feel, their lives are transformed. I think that it is important for us to have the Lisa Butlers at the table, especially as we go deeper into things, because we know the stuff. We know how we feel, right? We know the things of how we have to deal with, the very same things they're dealing with. You know, the fathers of those children are also the husbands, boyfriends, brothers, and uncles of the adult women, right? So we're dealing with some stuff, too, when they're off to jail or not present. We also know what it's like to walk every day to come home or drive up or whatever you do, get off at the bus stop of a dilapidated environment where everything is blighted and nothing is there. We know this, right?
Right, right.
And so if we know that that's happening for us, we know that our girls absolutely need a place to, just come undone with that and let it out. And we need you at the table, principals, administrators, and even people like myself who are advocates and who have programs. We still need a component where we call in a clinician and a therapist, because we cannot handle those things. We don't know, you know, when that comes up and a young girl says she's suicidal, that's not something to just say, oh, yeah, you were suicidal. You know what I mean? I can't just talk her through that. That takes something else.
Right. You're right, and I think we all need to know our lanes and stay in them, right? So definitely,
it's not a territorial thing. It's what's best for the girl.
And that's the thing. That's it. I mean, this has nothing to do with nobody being better than anybody. We're all doing the work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that you do that I can't do. And there's some things that I do that you can't do and that you don't even have a desire to do. You know what I mean? And I think that that's important. I think that you're right. I feel very comfortable saying what I don't know. If I don't, I'll tell a girl. I tell my clinical patients, if they say something to me in a therapy session that, you know, is something I have not dealt with or don't understand or need to process, you know what I say?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I let some silence happen, and then I say, you know what? Let me process that, and next week we can talk about it again, because I'm not going to sit up there and just be talking off the top of my head to somebody who's in situations that are life-threatening, life, you know, changing. So I think it's important for us to recognize when we're out of our, you know, out of our own little space, and be able to call somebody and say, hey, Lakeisha, I need you to help me with this. I don't know. What should I do? Do you have any recommendations? You know, how do I move forward with this? There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't make you stupid. It makes you smart. So I think that's important. I also wanted to say, too, Lakeisha, about one thing. When I think about girls' aggression, I also think about the negative ways and the negative impact of intersecting oppressions on their lives, right? So you got, you're black, you're female, you're poor. Let's not even throw in disabilities if you have any, right? If you are LGTB, LBGTQ, don't throw that in. Because then now you got about five or six different oppressions, right? And so it's already tough. But having, being a black young female who may be questioning her sexuality in our community is really hard. And we know why, right? I think that one thing that intervention providers have to do is be aware of that in the work that you're doing. Be aware that everybody in that space may not be straight. Everybody in that space, you know, may not worship the same as you or think about God the same as you or whatever. And we have to be open and secure enough in our own stuff to still provide great service and be loving and be kind and be compassionate with that. It comes up so much now in my programming, young girls who are exploring lesbianism and bisexuality. And I've had principals call me and say, can you come fix this problem? And so, you know, it's like, whoa, no, it's not a problem for me. Is it a problem for you? Because if it's a problem for you, then you shouldn't be a principal at a Chicago public school.
And it's not a problem for them. They just fine with it. So why? And so the thing we need to look at overall, Lisa, is it's not about us.
It's not
about us.
No,
has nothing to do with whether or not you approve of homosexuality.
Absolutely.
Whether or not you approve. When I walk through the door and I'm working with girls, all of that has to go back. That has nothing to do with what.
See, Lakeisha, babe, right? And so let's just say you're the exception. I'm the exception. There's a lot of spaces where these girls, a lot of intervention space that these young women come into contact with, where that is not the case. And they are feeling that. They know it. And so here we go again, reinforcing for them and reflecting back to them, something is wrong with you.
Mm-hmm. And normalize.
And then you wonder why they're mad and why they cuss you out. That's why.
Yes. Say that. Seriously, that is the point. That is what you just said. Say it again, please. I'm so serious.
I'm serious, too. I mean,
because
I
This is why this radio show exists, is because I don't know if we're the exception, but I absolutely know that this platform is necessary for more of our voices to be put out there so that people know that there is a better way forward. We don't have to keep doing what we've been doing and recycling this old normalization of wrong. You know what I mean?
I love that. I'm a hashtag that. Normalization of wrong. That speaks to a lot of different things that's going on in the world right now.
Yes.
Seriously. So I definitely agree. I like that. I like that term. I wanted to say too that when I say exceptions, I mean I think I'm exceptional. I know you are too.
Yes, we are.
But I want to say that, you know, I'm gonna push back on what you said. I think we are in terms of what we're doing in these spaces. I've been working with people who provide interventions for a long time, not just in the city of Chicago, but around the country, talking to them, listening to them. There's a lot of really interesting, you know, things going on out here, and not in a good way. And I think there are a couple people in Chicago that their work is fantastical. Like, they do some great work, like you. And when I say exceptional, I mean in the sense that we can leave our stuff outside the door. We can leave our religious beliefs and spiritual beliefs outside the door. We don't bring that stuff into these spaces with these kids. We don't do that. And it's purposeful. And I think that a lot of people have a hard time with that, including school administrators, because when you're calling me and saying you want me to come and deal with the problem of girls identifying as lesbian or trans or bisexual, then you're bringing your stuff into that environment, and it's making that space unwelcoming for people who you don't feel are normal. You know what I mean? So I just think that makes us exceptional in terms of the way we deal with the programming that we're able to provide, because, Lakeisha, there are a lot of young women who don't have any place that they can say, oh, this is what I think, or I like girls, or whatever. And, you know, if you and I are providing programming for them, then they can say that, and they can be safe to say it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I think that is, you're talking about resistance, a resistance movement, freedom fighting, like to have her be able to say that in that space and not be condemned. That's what that is. So,
I'm not going to downplay it. In 2015, that's not what we're doing. I'm not going to downplay it. We are absolutely exceptional.
Yeah,
and I would like to think that saving lives in that instance, you know, you just heard about the young girl Leela Alcorn, while she wasn't a black child, but transgender, and killed herself because her parents would not accept that she was wanted to be a girl. And so I know when you accept people, you can absolutely, and you provide that space for them to be who they want to be and who they are, then it is absolutely life saving. And so I'll say we're exceptional, not because we don't bring our spirituality into place, but I would think that it's because we do, and because our spirituality says that everybody is okay. Everybody is made in the image and the likeness.
I love it. Perfect.
I'm gonna claim what you said. We are exceptional, but I want to also just, like I said, I want to have you back to talk about what you find out from your research project exploring the impact of colorism and body images on African American girls' sexual behaviors. But I also want to talk about this documentary that you are working on producing and director. What's Left Behind? Black mothers' lives after the murder of their children. And that is so crushing. Just the thought of that, as you said, in this space and time, when we know that we're hearing new names, maybe two and three a day, of the lives that are taken at the hands of peers, at the hands of sanctioned state authorities. It's just maddening. And I cannot fathom what you're going to uncover and the rawness that's going to come out in this documentary. So I'm not sure when that's going to be ready, Lisa, but I definitely
It's not going to be ready for a long time, but let me tell you what's going to be ready. I'm going to, you know, making a documentary is more than a notion.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
I don't know what I'm doing, but this is something that's on my heart so heavy, and it won't let me go. It will not. Like, this is, I got to do it. So, and let me just say the reason why. What's Left Behind, when the cameras go away, when you have the instance where the mother is crying on TV, and then you may hear about the funeral, and then silence.
Yes.
But for her and for that family, that person, that human being is missing, has been plucked away. What is left? What's left behind? How do I go forth and my child, their room, their clothes, their smell, their favorite food, all of these things are now gone. There's nothing. And I'm so interested. I think that talking about this and having these women put voice to what's left behind will do a lot to humanize the mothers, black women, and the children that were taken by letting people see this was a person. This was not, you know, some kind of alien. This was a human being who was connected to people. Exactly. It goes so far beyond that. And what I'm really concerned about, Lakeisha, is what happens to the moms emotionally, mentally, physically. How does it break them down? How do they function? Do they go back to work? Do they stop working? Do they get on disability? What happens? And I just think people need to see us. People need to see black women in their full humanity rather than NeNe Leakes. You know what I mean? And no shade. I'm just saying. I want to hear from them. I think there's not enough. There is virtually no research or any information on kind of what happens, the aftermath, what happens to people emotionally, mentally, and physically after these kinds of things happen. But I want to. You don't ever hear. You rarely hear the moms, the sisters, the aunts, the grandmothers talk about, this is what happened when my baby was taken. This is how I went on 6 months later. This is how my life was looking 6 months down the line. And I think it's important to hear that.
And I know for sure that will actually be the reflections of Grace in personified. So it's that is going to be powerful. This platform is here for you in any way you need. To talk about it, to get the word out about it, just let me know. I will definitely support that.
I really appreciate that.
What you have coming up, the Power of Forgiveness, Self-Forgiveness Workshop. How can people, is it open invitation? How can people get involved in that?
So, you know, I did the first one in November the 1st with just forgiveness, the topic forgiveness, and it was so powerful and amazing. And I love providing spaces for women to talk about these really kind of important and powerful constructs and how they play out in their lives, right, for healing. And so self-forgiveness is something that has to happen before you can really be somebody who can forgive other people. And we're walking around holding grudges against ourselves, never really thinking about it, not one to uncover it, not one to talk about it, because we're ashamed. A lot of times, not forgiving the self is connected to shame and guilt, right, and carrying it around. And I really want to provide a space for people to kind of examine what self-forgiveness looks like and whether and how to start that process. So I'm going to be putting some information on Facebook in the next probably few days. The flyer will be out there, and then I'm actually working on a SoundCloud piece where I'm going to kind of talk about it, about 7-8 minutes, talk about what we'll be talking about in the session, and that's kind of how you'll get information. I'll for sure put the information out there for people, so thanks so much for mentioning that, because it's a big thing. Yeah, I appreciate
it. We're going to have it on our pages, too. Lisa Butler, I really do want to say thank you so much for just being present today. I know this is holiday season, and just want to thank you for accommodating us to make sure that we actually talked about this, because it is something that needs not just to be, you know, we see it all the time in spaces where it's to be sensationalized, but to really delve into it and to get to the point of how we can prevent this and how we can help our girls move beyond it is what I'm most interested in. So thank you so very much, Lisa, for participating today. And
thank you. I just want to say one thing before we cut off. I love you and I respect you so much and your work. Girls Like Me Project is phenomenal, and whatever I can do to further your dream, including, you know, financially, I am more than willing to do. And we just had this conversation recently, but I believe in you and I believe in your work. I think it's important.
And as you said, it's a mutual admiration society. Seriously, I'm so grateful, seriously, and we can go on and on, but, you know, just coming from where I came from as a girl, it is such a beautiful thing to see so much mutual respect and collaboration and support. And so that's what this is about. This is about us linking together, supporting one another, and making sure that that's what we're modeling. We're asking girls to do it. We should be modeling it for them. And so
Absolutely.
That's why I'm so glad about the power of what we have. And so, again, Lisa, thank you so very much. I can't
no
wait
problem.
To see what comes out of your project. And then also just to share where Black Girl Inc. is in the schools and how people can get sign their doors up and principals can get you into their schools to help them as well.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
No problem, Lisa. Thanks so much.